Welcome to the Herbal Womb Wisdom Podcast, where we explore the embodied practice of herbalism with the womb at the center for folks who are new to herbs or herbalists in the making. This is a place to become empowered to include herbs and natural therapies in your personal health and, most importantly, to reconnect to the deep wisdom and healing capacity of your own body and the earth. I'm your host, clinical herbalist and integrative health educator, Kaelea Honeybee. Let's dive in. Hi, beautiful friends. Welcome. Welcome back if you're returning, and welcome, welcome if you're new. Happy eclipse week. Happy eclipse portal window. Does feel like there's some potency in this time. I think the eclipse itself, for sure, here in the Wabanaki lands of Maine, we're very close in the mid-coast area. We are very close to the total eclipse path. So certainly there's some of that kind of cosmic energy that is alive. And there's this sort of window time around the eclipse where that can be palpable. But and really feeling that bursting energy, that Aries energy of springtime bursting forth, really, even though we still have a layer of snow. In fact, we just got about 20 inches of snow last week. In between the time that I recorded last week and this week, we got about 20 inches of snow in one storm. So it has been quite the eventful week here. The eclipse window has been showing itself and bringing winter back, apparently. But now really onward towards spring. I think all of us here in the Wabanaki lands are really feeling that desire. So I hope that you are faring well in this time, in this springtime abundance, bursting forth energy, and really feeling some of that, tuning into some of that for yourself, planting some seeds, both physically in the soil or in little starting trays or in your life. You know, as part of tuning into the seasons and the cycles outside of us is also tuning into the seasons and cycles inside of us, which I know that if you have been on this podcast listening for more than a few episodes, you hear me talk about kind of all the time, because it's incredibly powerful to actually pay attention to what is happening inside our bodies and listen to the deep inner wisdom that exists, and to recognize that we are a part of nature, that we are nature. Just as outside the seasons and cycles change, so too inside do our seasons and cycles change of our lives. And so along those lines, today's episode is really about the inner wisdom and the shifting and changing that can be potent and powerful in our transitional years of perimenopause, menopause, postmenopause, that whole period of time. And how the, in quotes, wise woman tradition of herbal medicine, which is mostly a Western herbal medicine tradition, a very kind of DIY connected to the earth, really connected to womb wisdom and ancestral connection and listening to your body and many more elements that today's guest, Serafina Kapranos, will share about. She's an herbalist, she's a homeopath, and she is, I would say, a ritualist, a ceremonialist. She kind of bridges the worlds of the energetic and the physical, the scientific and the magic all together in her work. So I'm excited for you to hear her perspective. She actually has at least 20 years of clinical practice under her belt. Like, she has been working with herbs and with people in the clinic for 20 years. She's been studying herbal medicine since her early teens. She'll tell her story, but she actually lived in a family where she's the third generation herbalist in her family, more of like a home herbalist style. So she kind of went the professional path from there. But she actually grew up working with herbs and not going to medical practitioners in the way that many of us have. She's somebody who has not experienced any antibiotics in her body, and she's in her 40s, in her mid-40s, I think she said. So she's got a lot of embodied practice and wisdom with the plants, with bodies, working with people. So I'm excited for you to hear what she has to share. Everything from a few herbs that she thinks are key that might be important, or like different body systems to focus on to really support a more smooth transition into and through and beyond menopause, and just how freaking empowering the menopausal and postmenopausal years can actually be if we allow ourselves to listen to our bodies and to our whole beings. So looking forward to you hearing this. I will also say that she does have a program that she is currently enrolling for. We're in April of 2024, and she is currently enrolling for our program. And there is a discount code if you want it in the show notes. So you can get the show notes at herbalwomb.com/episode116, herbalwomb.com/116, if you want to go and check out the work that she's offering, the course that she's offering, and get a little discount there. I think it's $150 off, so that's a pretty good deal. Okay, so before we dive in, I want to do the disclaimer that nothing that we share today is medical advice. Truly, I am an herbalist, I am an integrative health educator, and Serafina is an herbalist and a homeopath and a ritualist. And honestly, even though we both have a lot of health knowledge and we both work with people one-on-one, none of this is specific to your unique situation. You need to feel into, this is all for your own information, education, and personal empowerment, for you to feel into what feels true and right for you, because your own body, your own womb space, your own being, you always know best. And if you have any specific conditions or concerns, find a practitioner that feels really supportive for you to help you through the journey of your particular concern. And second disclaimer is that there are gendered pronouns used throughout this episode. Words like women, words like female, words like breasts are used in this episode, but this is totally appropriate for anyone truly who is going into and through the journey of menopause. And honestly, I think any of us living with a womb in our bodies, there is so much beautiful wisdom for you here. Okay, with no further ado, here's the interview. Welcome, Serafina. I'm really looking forward to this conversation with you. You're someone that I feel like I recognize the name of and just haven't known a lot about. And I feel like we walk in parallel worlds with herbs and bodies and cycles and just connection, deep connection to an inner wisdom. So I'm really looking forward to hearing, just to getting to know you a little bit. Welcome.
Thank you so much. Thank you. I'm so excited to be here.
Yay. So let's start with you introducing yourself, like what your background is, what you're doing now, and why you do what you do.
Yeah. So I have been a clinical homeopath and herbalist for about 20 years, and I'm the third generation herbalist in my family. So my mom and her parents immigrated to Canada when my mom was a little girl, and with them, they brought their traditional way of taking care of health in their family home. My grandparents did not grow up with a doctor. And so people had to learn about herbal medicine. And I was raised with that same ethic and principle in my family home. It was me, my mom, my dad, and my two siblings. And I don't think I went to a doctor until I was in my late teens, and it was to get like a travel record or something. And I always like to say to people, it wasn't that my family was anti-establishment or hippies necessarily. It was just what they knew. And so when I had a health crisis when I was 16, I had a spinal injury. I went to the doctor. That was actually one of the times we did go to the doctor. And instead of doing surgery, my mom looked at me and I looked at her and we both said, let's try everything else. And that brought me into more of a study into plants, because prior to that, it was just what we did. We drank herbal teas, we took herbal tinctures, we made different syrups and concoctions at home, but I hadn't ever really dove deep into the study of herbs. So I was a teen at home in bed because I was in chronic pain, poring over all of these old herbal texts. And it was also a time where I was diving into deeper spiritual teachings as well. And I think for many people, pain does that. It brings us into trying to understand life and healing. So that took up a lot of my teenage years around that time. And we went to osteopaths and homeopaths. And I was a skeptic of homeopathy because I was a herbalist and I was used to the sensuality of plants. These little white pills, I was skeptical of. And yet homeopathy was one of the modalities that radically changed my health and allowed me to be walking again and not have to have surgery. That, along with osteopathy and herbal medicine, I think altogether, it caught my heart and it caught my spirit at such a young age. And I knew this is my path. This is my path. Coupled together with my father, who was very sick and he was actually dying when I was a teenager. We didn't know that until he did a month prior to him dying when I just turned 21. But after I literally got back on my feet, I then poured all of my energy, my attention, and my studies into helping him. He was too far gone, unfortunately, although herbs did allow him to feel comfortable. And so he was able to have some comfort before he died, which was really, really heartwarming for all of us. So that's kind of what set me on my path. It was kind of a marriage and a coupling of, to where my roots are, combined with, like many of us, a crisis. And that just dove me deeper and deeper into my studies. And just briefly after I went to university, and then I started professional studies of herbal medicine at Emerson College of Herbology, I then had a dream which led me to the desert of New Mexico, which is where I did a 1-year apprenticeship with a shamanic practitioner down there in around the year 2000. So all of that happened within a few years, which set me on my path.
Wow. I love that. Thank you for sharing the journey that you've been on. And also super interesting to hear that New Mexico has been one of the sparking birthplaces of your path too, partly because that was one of the places that really birthed my path too.
Mm-hmm. Oh, interesting. That mm-hmm. is interesting. I didn't know that about you. Yeah. New Mexico. And considering I'm born and raised, all this was happening living in Toronto, Ontario, in Canada. So it couldn't be further, like more far from New Mexico, both in culture and land and landscape. I didn't even know what New Mexico really looked like, because this was pre-high-speed internet days. So when I did land there, I remember the smell, and I still remember it 25 years later. It still catches my heart, and I hope to be going back there in September.
Mm, nice. Yeah. Yeah. It's definitely a heart home, spirit home for me, for sure.
Mm. Yeah. It is one of those vortexes on the earth. And I agree with you. You're making me remember how there was a moment when I was done, I was done. And I remember packing up my car, jumping in my car, not really knowing where I was headed next, but I just left. And it wasn't because I fell out of love with the place, but I heard the land speak, and it said, "You're done. You have to leave." I remember some people saying, it either embraces you or it chews you up and spits you out.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, totally. It is like that. So I'm curious what your practice looks like now, and like, where are you now? You said before we started recording, you said you're on an island.
Yeah. So I live on another place that some people do call a land of enchantment. Interestingly, it's called Salt Spring Island in British Columbia and Canada. And it's a small island that is part of a cluster of Gulf islands. And it's a very special, beautiful place. And after leaving New Mexico, it's interesting, there seems to be some kind of funny connection between the two places, because I was studying Toltec shamanism while in New Mexico, and it was transformative. It was essentially a year where one-on-one, where I was working with this incredible healer, and I was essentially giving death to myself. I spent a year doing this at a very young age. I left, and I remember needing, like, the land told me to leave, and my heart was aching because I knew that practice was something that I needed to do for the rest of my life, but I could no longer stay in New Mexico. And so I lived on the road for 6 months and moved up to British Columbia, Canada, to enroll in a 4-year program for homeopathic medicine. And I didn't connect with Vancouver, but I came to this little island for a weekend, a holiday weekend. And it was there, that first weekend where I was visiting, where someone turned to me and they said, "Oh, you've been studying Toltec shamanism. How interesting. There's a New Mexican woman who lives here named Gloria Valencia. And she and her partner teach Toltec wisdom. She's from, born and raised up New Mexico, an indigenous woman living all the way up here in Canada." And that, I took that as a sign. So I connected with them, and I became an apprentice for 10 years studying with them intensively. Mm. And I ended up staying on this little island, and I've been here 23 years now. I say I came for a weekend and I never left. And that is true. And it is this interesting place, a population of 12,000, and it's close to a couple of big cities, and people come and go. It's one of those very special vortexes. And so I worked, after graduating homeopathy school, I worked in an interdisciplinary clinic for 16 years with 3 other practitioners, for 4 of us. And then just before COVID, I left that clinic, and I have a clinic here on the land I live on that I bought in 2019. So my practice is a combination of Western herbalism, classical homeopathy, and then, being who I am, I bring the essence of my shamanic practice to everything I do. I don't know how do you separate who you are. So I meet people where they're at. Sometimes they need only herbs and more of that clinical approach. Sometimes they need more plant spirit medicine. Sometimes they need a combination of classical homeopathy and herbs. Sometimes they need a ceremony and a ritual. So I work with all kinds of people. And sometimes I work more in a mentorship capacity. And then I teach at Pacific Rim College. I teach for Ecoversity, a herbal program there. And then I run my own program, which I've done for 16 years, called the Alchemy of Herbal Medicine, which is a combination of deep practical, the application of herbs, and then also more of a plant spirit medicine teaching. I weave the practical and the magical. And it's all steeped in the Wise Woman tradition, which I haven't yet mentioned. In 1998, 1999, living in Ontario, Canada, it was easy to get down to New York State, where I was introduced to Susan Weed. And I did study with her as well. And that made a huge impact in terms of being exposed to what is called the Wise Woman tradition. So it's sort of the braiding of that tradition, the Toltec wisdom, and then the priestess work that I've been doing for 20 years that all informs my herbal practice.
Wow. It just sounds like you've found your own path, like you've cultivated your own path. I love the idea of you braiding these different modalities together, and the Wise Woman tradition being a part of your foundations in herbalism is so lovely. And just that homeopathy has been a part of that and shamanism, that's just, it's really neat. So thank you for sharing. Yeah, I feel like for me too, I don't have quite as long of a history with herbalism, but one of my first teachers was steeped in the Wise Woman tradition. She had apprenticed with Susan Weed, maybe in the late 90s too, actually. Anyway, she lived in Western Massachusetts, and I did my first apprenticeship, year-long apprenticeship with her in the 2000s. And that really similarly has been a foundation and a basis for my practice and my understanding of plants. And I think it's actually a really beautiful way to begin, because there's so much about just connecting deeply with plants and nourishing the body. And I'm excited for you to talk about it, but it's something I haven't actually really mentioned that much on the podcast. But I think it is, like, I've actually had friends who just studied, like they went to a 3-year herb school and they just kind of studied the clinical pieces. And then I've told them what my background is, and they're just like, wow, I just feel like I wish I had started there.
Yeah, exactly. And I want to just say to any new herbalist who might be listening today is, it took me years to feel confident to braid all these pieces together. It didn't just naturally happen. There were times, especially in the early and mid and even late 2000s, where I hid that more shamanic, witchy, wise woman way. I hid it, and I hid it behind a white coat of being a clinician. And so I just want to say that, because I have so many young students say, how are you so yourself? Like, how are you able to bridge all these worlds and braid them all together? And it takes time. And I think it's an initiation. We're apprenticed to the plants, and then we're initiated into being more of who we are. And I love that you said that about the Wise Woman tradition, because I'm glad that's where you started as well. And I think it is such a strong foundation. And even if a listener hadn't started there, I'd say, go and check it out through some teacher, because it reminds us of who we are. And it reminds us that we belong with the plants, and the plants are people's medicine. And herbal traditions all around the world were held and kept in the hands of women. And this does not mean that men are not also plant people and wise about plants or can be medicine people. That's not what I'm saying. What I'm saying is women have tended throughout the arc of history, been the keepers of healthcare, of midwifery, of tending our families. We have been the early nurses and midwives and witches and priestesses and healers. And that is the essence of the Wise Woman tradition, to deeply connect with the wise women who came before us, to remember that you too are a wise woman. And there's a deep intelligence that lives in your cells that knows the ways of the plants. It's baked into our DNA. And when we ignite that awakening of plants and women and tradition and wisdom, it's like a part of our ancestral memory wakes up And we remember that we know we're made to know the way of plants. And so when we have that foundation and we turn to the books or the teaching or the classroom, it's familiar. It's not learning from the head and the intellect. It's learning through the body.
I love that. And I feel that. It's really interesting because I don't think about it very much, that is kind of where I came from. But it is interesting because even still, like, I've just done so many different programs. Probably some people can relate. Like, because with herbal medicine, it's really, if you want to continue on with it, it's just lifelong learning. And every teacher has different gems to offer, you know? So I've studied with a lot of different teachers over the years, and I ended up going to grad school and got a master's of science degree in herbalism. And I think one of the things that did happen to me in grad school, and I just think it's interesting to kind of contrast it, is that I was essentially, similarly to how you were hiding behind the white clinic coat, the clinician coat, mm-hmm. I was similarly in that place where it was like, there was no invitation. There was no welcome of my personal, deep, inner, intuitive connection to the plants. Mm-hmm. It was all about, oh, I have to cite all the resources and look into the research and be disconnected from that part of myself because it's academia, right? Like, that's, of course, my teachers, I could tell, had more connection to the plants, but in this environment, it was not welcome to bring in this kind of personal, deep, intuitive connection.
Yeah, I bet.
Yeah. So I feel like there's that piece of, and then in the past few years, like, I graduated from that in 2019. And it's like the past few years, I feel like I've been unraveling, like releasing all of the academia that sort of wove itself around me. Mm-hmm. Being like, oh, I can bridge the worlds. I can braid these worlds together, like you were saying.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm so glad to hear that. And not only can you braid those worlds together, is that's the way it has been until maybe 500 years ago, mm-hmm. is they were never separate. Mm-hmm.
Totally true. Yes. They're not separate. Yeah, science and spirit. I actually just made a post about that on Facebook yesterday, but the sense of, like, you know, there was a time a few years ago that I felt like, oh, I can't mix the two. But you know what? The truth is, like you're saying, until about 500 years ago, they were always the same. There's nothing separate about them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I'm curious, I'd love to hear what you think about this, but my take on it is that science, the scientific way and scientific language, and even if we're going to talk about herbs and constituents and alkaloids and saponins and polysaccharides, that is one language that is saying the same thing that we say in herbal energetics. When we talk about astringency or hot, cold, damp, dry, diffusive, moving, like, I feel like they're two different languages that are saying the same thing through a different view.
Yes. 100%. Yes. Yes. And I think that it is like different ways of knowing. And there's so many ways of knowing, because even bringing in the shamanic practices and the traditional healing practices of different communities, of having relationships and awareness of plants that could be even from a spirit connection to them and having awareness. Like, there's so many pathways to knowing.
Yeah, I agree. And I think that's what I love about the wise woman tradition, is there's an acknowledgement of the heroic modalities, the heroic approach, which is more surgical and technical. There's an acknowledgement of the more intuitive ways of knowing, and even the path that kind of bridges the two, of the more, I would call more the naturopathic approach, which tries to bridge the two, although the naturopaths nowadays are still more scientific, mm-hmm. and more heroic. But the wise woman tradition embraces all of them. It's about using the right tool in the right circumstance. It means that, what I'll share is one of the most impactful moments when I was at the Wise Woman Center in the late 90s is meeting this woman who, she herself was a scientist. She was there recovering from breast cancer. And she was meditating in the sun, holding a crystal and holding, I think it was a dandelion. Mm-hmm. And afterwards I went and I spoke to her and I said, what were you doing? Can you share what you were just doing? And she described to me how there she was drinking her red clover infusion, which is full of phytoestrogens that are protective. She was channeling and asking her guides to help heal her as she was preparing for chemotherapy. And I was 19 or 20 at the time. And I remember being so self-righteous and vigilant. And I said, how can you be doing chemotherapy? I mean, you should just give all your healing over to herbs. And she looked at me and she said, but the wise woman way is that chemotherapy can also be holistic. And it struck me, and it was the first of many teachings, that it's how we perceive and how we embrace a modality or technique. And now, 25 years later, every patient that I see, some are ashamed to tell me that they're doing chemo or radiation. Some are ashamed to tell me that they're taking all these medications. And the very first thing I do is I say, look, it's about using the right tool in the right circumstance. And you can still be using your pharmaceuticals and getting your surgery, getting your whatever you need to restore your health. And we can give you herbs and homeopathy and prayer and ceremony, whatever it takes to make sure that medication works on your behalf. So I always like to bring that to folks who feel shame about using pharmaceuticals. Of course, we want to use them in the right time, use prevention always first, so that we don't have to get to that situation where we need that medical intervention. But there should never be any shame in utilizing those tools, because that's what they are, a tool.
Totally. Yeah. It's taken me, I've similarly was in my little self-righteous place in my early 20s, especially, but I feel like it's taken me along on a meandering journey, you know, to get to the place where, honestly, I think the best path is integrative medicine, you know, for the best path for many people is integrative medicine, actually, depending on where they're at, because, you know, most of us didn't learn all these things when we were kids and haven't been working with like healing practitioners our whole lives. And so there's a lot of ruts, there's a lot of patterns, there's a lot of imbalances. It's integrating the many ways of healing is such a beautiful option for us. It doesn't have to be one or the other.
Yeah. And I think when we have that attitude, we tend to use less pharmaceuticals in the end. Like one of my kind of missions in life and what drives me is ultimately to teach natural medicine so that we don't have to turn to allopathic or Western medicine unless it's absolutely necessary. And if we had that approach worldwide, our drinking water would be cleaner. We wouldn't have the runoff that we have of pharmaceuticals going into our fresh water. We wouldn't have the impact of pharmaceuticals, some which can't break down in our soil. Like, it's a huge deal that pharmaceutical medicine, here I am just saying, yes, let's embrace it, but also let's reserve it for when it's really needed, because of not only the impact on our physical bodies, but there's a real impact. If you dive deep into those research papers, There's a big environmental impact on essentially nuclear medicine, pharmaceutical medicine. That's where in the work that you and I do and many listening, is if we can have people always be employing natural medicine on the daily, drink your herbal daily infusions, integrate wild herbs into your diet every day, be in tune, cultivate and learn how to connect to your deep inner knowing and your inner wisdom. Connect and learn how to cultivate your intuition so that you understand early when your body is talking to you and presenting symptoms. And if we had that knowledge baked into our family systems, when we're raising our children with this kind of awareness, then we can cut things off to the past before they become so advanced that we do need to turn to technical medicine. And again, there's no shame if that is where you're brought to and you have to use those interventions. But the wise woman tradition is all about that. It begins with deeply listening to your body and understanding the signs and the early signals so that we can use the beauty of herbal medicine in that prevention. And as I love that old expression, a pinch of prevention is worth a pound of cure. I have found that true in my own life. I'm in my mid-40s. I've never had an antibiotic in my life. And I don't say that to make myself better than anyone. It's only because at a young age, I was forced to listen to all the early signs and signals of my body. And that's when plants and homeopathy are so brilliant in that early stage. They're also brilliant in advanced stages of disease, but of course their brilliance really is in those early stages.
1,000% yes. And that's awesome that you are living in a body that has not experienced antibiotics. I imagine part of that is also that you grew up in a family that wasn't going to doctors.
Yeah, exactly.
Gosh, you know, when we're young and we have parents who bring us to doctors, that's there's a heavy hand on the antibiotics.
Yeah.
And I think that's really incredible and like a beautiful story. And I think also something I relate to deeply in myself from a fairly early age, really orienting myself towards natural therapies and herbs and deep nutrition and all of that. I think it's been, and also that deep listening to body, to spirit, to mind, to emotions, like really paying attention. And I know that that can be scary for some folks who that's new for, to actually become present with their body or with their mind or emotions, like all of that. Like there can be stuff in there, but to really slowly and gently allow ourselves to start listening and paying attention, and especially in those early moments, feeling when things are a little bit out of balance and tending those places, like, yeah, it's powerful. It is ridiculously powerful to just listen to your body.
Yeah. And I noticed that in my students and even patients, it can be scary to listen to their body, because instantly with every little twang and gesture, there's fear that can come up. But I always like to remind people that so-called symptoms, what we call symptoms, are the body's intelligence speaking to us and through us.
Mm-hmm.
And so as you get familiar with the twangs and the little pains and the all the little ways that your body communicates to you, and you begin to see a pattern, we can demystify those symptoms. And then we can see that most of them are not life-threatening at all. I know there's a lot of people who suffer from health anxiety. So I always like to bring that into the equation, that most of the time, it's not going to be something scary or dangerous. And that's also why when I teach herbal medicine, I always have a class on giving yourself a self-breast exam. And what amazes me, how many women are terrified of touching their own breasts, because they're terrified that they're going to feel a lump. But most breasts are lumpy. There's not little cysts, which are not life-threatening. There's lumps and bumps, and all the tissue of the breasts are very nodular in nature. There's milk ducts in there. There's so much in the breast. But still, 15, 20 years later teaching this, I'm taken aback at how many women are terrified and reluctant to touch their own breasts. Mm-hmm. And yet when they're eased into this education that it's a breast tenderness is normal, especially mid-cycle or in that luteal phase, the breasts are lumpy and bumpy. And most of those little bumps that you're feeling, they move around. Those are safe. Those are okay. That's part of the tissue. But there's so much empowerment that can be reclaimed there when we get to know our own body and understand that health is a continuum. It's not this pristine kind of perfection that we were fed at one point. Health is flexible. It's dynamic. It can look so many different ways to so many different people, and especially the female body.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, which is totally cyclical. And our topic for today, I really love everything that you're sharing. And I'm a huge advocate of touching our breasts and just feeling what's normal for us. And honestly, like I studied massage and body work. That was one of my initial foundations in natural therapeutics. That was when I was in New Mexico. I learned breast massage and I offered that to people. And it's really interesting because actually offering it to clients, it's like they were comfortable with me touching their breast, like as a professional somehow. But then inviting them to actually do that themselves was an edge. So it's just a super interesting, just you mentioning that. It's like, yeah, like there's this way that some people feel like, oh no, there's fear there. Cause okay, what if there's a lump? But then there's also like, oh no, that's like a sexual space, or like, I need to be modest, or that's not for me. There's so many stories around our sexual parts, honestly.
But yeah, that's really powerful. I'm so glad that you learned breast massage. That's so exciting. I haven't heard many massage therapists learn that, but that's brilliant. And yeah, isn't it wild how the breasts are so sexualized that that's kind of the only way that they feel comfortable relating to them unless they're with a professional like yourself. That's very profound.
So yeah, bodies and being with bodies. And I learned so much from just talking to clients and people around me, just like, wow, you know. And I think similarly to you, I think for me, I haven't been deeply immersed in the medical field in myself. Like my family didn't really like go to doctors all the time, just occasionally. So it wasn't really like infused in that world so much. But I've always had just this inner sense in myself of wanting to do, to live life in a way that feels good for me, that feels meaningful to me, that feels like it makes sense to me. And for me, that has been natural therapeutics and incorporating herbs and incorporating nutrition, like all the things. For me, I feel very grateful for that. And I've always felt this comfort in listening to my body. I've always felt this comfort in touching my body. You know, I think it's so, yeah, just to really honor that everyone's journey is different and that it's okay if you're not just immediately comfortable with your body or with listening or touching. It's like it can be a gentle, slow practice to get into.
Yeah, absolutely.
So speaking of kind of gentle, slow practice and just our cycling bodies as people with wombs and women, I'm curious if we can dive a little bit into menopause and just that kind of perspective that maybe the wise woman tradition or maybe you have on the menopausal transition compared to maybe the status quo. Are you open to sharing that?
Yeah. The menopausal age, that transition, which for some can last even 20 years, is probably one of the biggest demographics I work with, like many health providers, because women tend to seek out health support more than men. So what has informed my practice and my view of the menopausal years, of course, is the wise woman tradition and then experience, life experience. But I think first and foremost, what many of us herbalists can agree on is it's not a disease. It's not a diagnosis. It's a transition and a phase of life. And what I observe, I have a couple of women in my practice right now that come to mind immediately, is it is a transformation. It's not only a death, but it's also a regeneration. And it's a phase where we step more deeply into our becoming, like who we are becoming. There are, of course, for some, a lot of body symptoms that can come up, joint pain and mood and sleep and hot flashes, and sometimes heavy bleeding and flooding. All of those are signs of the body's wisdom and intelligence. I don't like to reduce it down to what your progesterone and estrogen are doing. Those are factors. But more broadly, all of those are the body's intelligence saying, hey, pay attention to me. I need more attention. I might need some herbs or less caffeine or less alcohol. I might need more sleep. I might need to reevaluate my stress and what I have on my plate. But more than anything, it's an invitation to go inward for a while. And what I've observed in my practice is that as women heed the call of their body's intelligence in this period of transformation, as they heed the call, as they turn their eye inward to be present and available and listen to their deep inner knowing, once they're on the other side, there's this incredible blossoming. And what not a lot of women or not a lot of medical providers talk about much is sometimes women's libidos increase at menopause and postmenopausally. There's all this kind of societal talk that women dry up and they become less sexual and they become more asexual. That may be true for some. And a lot of women feel relieved by that. They feel relieved not having to be at the whim of their libido or sex. But what's not talked about enough is how many women come to me and they say, Serafina, I actually feel more sexual, more aroused, more excited, more empowered sexually, and even an increased libido. And then there's not the fear of needing to get pregnant or having to get pregnant. So there's even more liberation there. So it is an incredible period of regeneration. And what I have found eases the transition is taking care of your nervous system and taking care of your adrenals. So it is a chapter where I encourage drinking nourishing infusions, taking care of your adrenals with many herbs. One of my favorite herbs is blue vervain, Verbena hastata, which nourishes the nervous system, but also the hypothalamus pituitary axis. So that endocrine function. And then reducing alcohol and caffeine. You don't have to eliminate them entirely, but at least reducing your consumption can ease that transition and also turn that eye inward towards that transformation. I think it was Christian Northrup where I first heard the idea that the menopausal woman, instead of sharing her seed out in the world with maybe having babies if she does have children, or producing all these massive creative endeavors, she holds that seed of wisdom within. She doesn't die, but she holds that seed wisdom within that she can then share even more broadly with the community at large. So it's this incredible opportunity where women get to share the harvest of their wisdom, but they're still productive members of society. They're still sexual beings. They're still expressing their femininity in multiple ways, but there's more discernment and there's more wisdom at this phase.
I love that so much. I think the reframing of our menopausal phase, perimenopause and menopause, postmenopause, just to reframe that into a place of power of that inner seed within us. I love that so much. I feel like I've heard that before, but you're just very eloquent in your words. So it's really lovely to hear you speak it again and to just bring it into this space. And gosh, I just feel like so many people dread the time of, oh my gosh, I'm going to have to go through this transition and I'm going to have to navigate life. And then when they are in that process, you know, there are symptoms, not for everybody either. Like, I don't even think my mom had very many perimenopausal symptoms. I don't remember her really talking about it. It was just like all of a sudden she wasn't bleeding anymore. And what's so interesting about my mother, I don't know what happened with your lineage, but with my mother is that I think it was maybe when she was 51 that she stopped bleeding. And then the next year she quit her corporate job and she moved like down to Florida from New York.
Well, that's interesting. I can't believe you bring that up because I was literally just thinking about my mom. She was 52 and she did the same thing. She left Toronto, Ontario. She moved out to the West Coast here and completely started a whole new career. She moved out of the dental world and became a hairstylist. Like complete 180.
Yeah, I think this is inspiring, right? Like these stories. I think that's, we just need to hear more stories.
Even if a woman doesn't identify or may not listen to a podcast like this, she doesn't identify as like a wise woman or listening to her deep inner wisdom. Women have it inside ourselves. And there are so many stories like your mom and my mom where when they're going through menopause, late 40, kind of with Caucasian women, the standard age bracket is 49 to 55. And I want to just say some women, regardless of their ethnic background, can start as young as 30s, early 30s. And some women bleed right up until their mid or even late 50s. But when women are really going through that passage of stopping bleeding, there is, like, I have observed this powerful moment. I'm thinking of another client of mine who she left her husband, got into a relationship with a woman and started a rock band in her 50s. Like, I mean, it's so incredible, this new lease on life and this incredible juice that increases, changing your fashion, changing your hair, changing your style, changing your career, leaving a relationship for another one, traveling the world, selling everything, starting over again, starting a new business. I know a lot of women who start a new career. They go back to school. Aviva Ram, she went to medical school when she was going through her time of change in her 40s. I have another patient of mine who went to medical school at 45, graduated at 55. So I think what is happening here and what isn't spoken enough about is women have this increase of energy, increase of creative energy. And there's this time of looking at, what haven't I done yet? What have I been suppressing, repressing? What's a dream that I've been ignoring? What's been at the corner of my psyche that I haven't had the time to listen to because I've been busy raising kids or surviving financially or building some other career relationship? What sacrifices have I made? And I'm just no longer willing to make those sacrifices. That's what I mean when I say there's this becoming and this incredible blossoming. And I wish I knew who I could credit here. And if anyone knows, drop it somewhere in the comments so we can both learn. But I remember maybe 10 years ago, there was someone, I think her name is Regina. I don't know her last name, but she's a teacher of women's wisdom. And she says, forget the maiden, mother, crone. Let's talk about the maiden, the mother, the queen, and then the crone.
Mm.
And I love that so much. She identifies the wisdom, the menopausal years as the queen years, which is what you and I are talking about. Women who in their late 40s, 50s, they're like, screw it. I'm going to move. I'm going to change my identity. I'm going to become more of who I really want to be. And then we give ourselves the title crone when we're ready to have those years. That might be in your 70s. I know some 70-year-olds who are like, no way, I'm still in my queen years, having lots of great sex and exploring my creativity, and call me a crone when I'm in my 80s. So I just think it's so important that women know life does not end at menopause. You do not become this shriveled up old grandma, unless that's what you want to do and be. You get to self-identify with it, define it for yourself. But I think it's really important to know that we become more enlivened at this phase of life.
Yes. I've had that question before of like, it doesn't make sense to just start calling people a crone when they move through menopause, because it's still like midlife. Like, it's like, geez, you know, the concept of a crone is that you're really in your elder years. And I feel like that's at least 70, if not 80, and depends on the person, right? Everyone has their own flow of energy. I have seen that, exactly. You know, you can see the difference.
I think women, this maiden, mother, crone identification, I was talking to a woman much older than me, who's a scholar, a British scholar who looks at Celtic spirituality and Greek mythology. And I asked her about this. I said, what's with this maiden, mother, crone? Like, and she said, well, keep in mind, Serafina, that women were having babies well into their mid-40s.
Mm.
In our great grandmother, in our grandmother and great grandmother's life. So women were a mother. They were still breastfeeding and mothering well into their 50s. And I had to pause and reflect on that. And my own grandmother, who's 90 today, she's still alive. Her mother had her at 44.
Hmm.
And she said that was normal. Women having their 9th, 8th, 9th, 10th baby into their mid 40s was normal. So it was so informative that we sometimes think that the mothering years are in your 20s and your 30s, but there was a time where women were having that mothering phase was many, many more years. So you were a mother well of young children well into your 50s, maybe even your 60s is when they all flew the nest. And then you did move into your crone years.
Yeah. And I mean, life cycles may have looked a little different too at different times.
Yeah.
Too. So yeah, it's really interesting to think. I mean, also, gosh, if you're having 9 or 10 kids, your body's going to be pretty darn depleted over time. I mean, depending, and maybe there's some people who are able to nourish themselves really deeply along the way, but honestly, I've heard from many parents and mothers that like each pregnancy, it's like the next one. I've had clients, I've had friends who, you know, 3 pregnancies in, they're like, oh, postpartum, oh, now I have an autoimmune condition, you know? And it's like, yeah, I think there is a way that we don't have, maybe there was historically the art of convalescence, the art of nourishment. We don't really have that in our in place right now. So it is so easy to be depleted. Like you were speaking to with the concept, I love the idea of in this perimenopausal, menopausal time, really focusing on adrenal health, focusing on the nervous system, really cultivating that soil and supporting it. I feel like that's also in any transitional time, you know, when we're in our postpartum period, if we're experiencing something that's an upheaval in our life.
And just 2 other things I want to share with the listeners is for years before I had a lot of clinical experience, I was really super anti-hormonal replacement therapy. And still, my philosophy is use it as a last resort. And I have had so much success where women don't need to go that way when they're doing this intensive herbal therapy with me around the nerve vines, for the nervous system and the adrenals and endocrine system. And I'm a huge advocate, please do not suffer. There are a handful of women in my practice who are in their 40s and early 50s, and they've needed for their own health and well-being to take something like bioidentical progesterone or estrogen. And if you need to do that, it does improve your quality of life. Again, bioidentical through a naturopathic doctor, only as a last case resort if you really need to. But it breaks my heart when I see women in their 40s and early 50s who were pain of sex is too painful because the vaginal tissue is thinning and herbs are not working for them. And or their joint pain is extreme and their lack of sleep is so extreme. They feel like they're becoming crazy. That's their own language. And they're not able to show up for their family or their own life. In some circumstances, bioidentical hormonal replacement therapy through a good naturopathic doctor can be utterly and completely life-changing. Almost overnight for some women, where they get to enjoy sex again, they get to feel, in their words, more normal, they get to sleep well. And in the wise woman way, I'm still with these women, if they have to go that route, I'm still giving them their herbal infusions. They are still taking herbs. They're still eating good whole food. They are still doing all their other practices, and it is not a failure. And the other piece to that is what I have found clinically is in order to have a smooth transition into menopause, as smooth as possible, is years before the symptoms start to come, start nourishing your nervous system. You're evaluating your stress levels. You already are feeding your adrenals and nervous and endocrine system. So that might be where if somebody's listening and they're not yet experiencing any menopausal symptoms, but maybe they're in their 40s or in their family, it comes early. So maybe they're in their late 30s. This is the time to be looking at herbs like ashwagandha and shatavari, which is one of my favorites, and looking at other adaptogens like Eleuthero, Rhodiola, Schizandra. Those are all adaptogens.
One of my favorite plants on the planet.
Is it?
Oh, yeah. I love Schizandra so much.
How do you take it? How do you like to take it?
Mostly I take it in tincture. I really love, I love the tincture. I like to take it in, I actually like to put it in sparkling water. I like it that much, you know, that I put the tincture in sparkling water. And then sometimes if you squeeze a little lime in there, it's like.
That sounds really good. I'm going to try that. My favorite way of taking Schizandra, one of them, is in a honey. So take the berries dried and infuse them in honey. It's not only makes a gorgeous ruby red honey, but it's so delicious.
Mm-hmm. I have had Schizandra honey too before. It is really good.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that's so good. And then along with those adaptogens, make sure you're hitting up those nervines in a beautiful way. Herbal infusions are one of my favorites. Milky oats, nourishing your body with milky oats, all through your 40s would probably be a good idea. Or 30s if menopause comes on early in your family. But doing all these can encourage a smooth menopausal transition because how well a woman fares through that stage of life is dependent on how strong her reserves are to begin with. Because remember, symptoms come, it's a telltale sign of the body's intelligence telling us that we need attention. There's something going on. So if we can nourish our body doesn't have to produce a lot of the distressing symptoms.
I love that. I really do. I think just even the idea, I actually had someone on over a year ago now that she was an acupuncturist and a Chinese herbalist, and she was speaking to preparing, easing into menopause. And part of what, you know, from a very different lens of Chinese medicine, she was speaking to is as early as your late 20s. You can actually be really cultivating essentially the soil, the inner soil of your body, and doing so really with that intention of knowing that you're going to be in the transition eventually. And I love that this is really mirroring that in a lot of ways.
Yeah, exactly. And that's kind of the homeopathic philosophy is to tend the soil of your body.
Tend the soil of your body. I love that so much. Thank you. Is there anything else that you want to make sure that people hear or know around the menopausal transition, specifically any herbs, anything else that you feel like we're missing before I ask you how people can find you?
Yeah. So I think a herb that I would encourage every woman to look at is ashwagandha. I'm not really, here I am contradicting myself. I actually, my approach is the matching the individual to the right herb. But I do find if there is going to be one herb or two, I'll say shatavari is my other one. Those two herbs are great because they're calming adaptogens. They're soothing adaptogens and they encourage deep sleep. And then my other herb that I would recommend women check out and get to know, and it might just be a good friend of yours, is blue vervain, verbena hastata, I mentioned earlier. And this is a good one for women, especially if you feel like you have a lot on your shoulders, you're racing around from one thing to the next. You feel like you can't get anything done because you're so distracted with your to-do list and you can barely get it. It's kind of paralysis by analysis. You might have headaches and migraines and shoulder pain and back pain and gallbladder irritation. And maybe your family and partner to describe you as like a grumpy bear. It's blue vervain. Blue vervain. Take a look at that one, because so many of us are carrying so much in our lives. We're taking care of so many people, work, all of our responsibilities. So it's a very safe herb. It's very cooling and soothing and grounding. And a good way to take it is as a herbal tincture. It's very, very bitter. So taking it as a tea or an infusion might not be the best, but it is one of my favorites. And then if you are getting hot flashes and night sweats, it's also a great herb for that as well. So those would be my three. That's at least where I would start.
I love that. Yeah. Ashwagandha, shatavari, and blue vervain. Yeah, I actually, let's see, I don't grow shatavari, but I grow ashwagandha and blue vervain regularly and have a strong relationship with them myself. So definitely love that you brought them up. Blue vervain's a really beautiful plant too. If someone's a gardener, especially, but even like I've grown it in pots and it is a perennial, a short-lived perennial, but it's something that you can grow yourself and easily make a tincture from yourself. If you just have a plant, even you can probably make it a nice size plant. You can probably make enough tincture. Maybe you have a few plants depending on how big they grow. Such an incredible ally. It's such an incredible ally that I think is often overlooked, not one that's mentioned all the time. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. I find that too. It's one of those good classics.
Mm-hmm. Thank you so much, Serafina. This has been an amazing conversation.
Yeah, good.
I appreciate the breadth and depth of your practice and your relationship with the plants and with energetics and spirit, and just that you weave all of that together. I mean, we didn't go deeply into all of those places because obviously we only have this short time together, but I feel inspired. I'm excited to actually check out more of what you're offering. And if people are listening and they're also kind of like, what is Serafina offering and where can I find her and what's going on? where can they go?
Yeah, well, what I'll mention is probably by the time this airs, we'll have registration open for this program called From the Wild Edge, which is a program steeped in the Wise Woman tradition that straddles the practical and the magical. It's co-taught by my co-founder for the Center for Sacred Arts, Dr. Carly DeNoon, who's a naturopathic doctor and physician who focuses on women's health and menopause. She's utterly brilliant. And she brings in the science. So you're going to learn the modern science, but we also bring in herbal medicine. We have medicine making classes that are beautiful videos, to like how-to videos. And then I bring in ritual and magic and myth. And the whole program is taught through the lens of myth, because we didn't get into that today. But what helps women understand, make sense of their transitions, not only menopause, but this program's for women as young as 18 up to their 80s. It's about myth can be so helpful as a way to see ourselves and give context to our life journey, no matter what transition we're going through. So the whole program is taught with that mythic lens as we explore myth. And then we also explore the modern medicine, the herbal medicine, the ritual. I give you the basics of ritual and ceremony. So it's self-paced, and then, or you can opt to join us live as well. And there's 16 live classes. We meet twice a week for 8 weeks. So anyone listening, we'd love to join you. It is a very robust program that gives you like a year of content at least to go through. And folks can find me kind of everywhere, social media and website, serafinacopranos.com. And the Wild Edge program is offered through our school, the centerforsacredarts.com.
Beautiful. And I will definitely put all those links, whatever links you send me, I will put them in the show notes so they can be easily accessed. And yes, thank you so much. Thanks for coming and hanging out with me, having a conversation.
My pleasure. Such a pleasure to be here. Thanks for all the great questions and beautiful conversation.
Woo woo! You have made it, my beautiful friend, to the end of the interview. Congratulations. And thanks for sticking around if you were here the whole time or if you left and came back. I always really appreciate just knowing that you're here all the way to the end. I feel like in this conversation some of the things that stuck out for me. I'm curious what stuck out for you. If you have anything to share about what stuck out for you, I would love to hear about that. Of course, you can tag me at Herbal Womb Wisdom on Instagram if you want to share anything, and maybe share the episode with somebody if you feel like it's perfect for them, or you feel like maybe for your audience or your community it might be supportive. Please feel free to share. But for me, what stuck out were a few things. Number one, Serafina, how she really truly does braid together clinical practice, like clinical physical herbal practice with homeopathy, which is a very subtle form of medicine, but also very powerful, and then really brings in also the spiritual layers. Like, I think that that in itself is, it is unique, at least in the way of actually saying that out loud, is kind of a thing that I think there's a lot of people who work in that way, but maybe don't speak it out loud. But I feel like it's really neat to hear about a clinical practitioner who really does like individualize what she offers. And she's also at a very professional level. You know, she's a registered herbalist in Canada, and she has, you know, certain distinctions. She teaches at colleges, and then she also brings in a lot of these more energetic layers, which I appreciate a lot because it feels so important and true and really important in my own personal healing path. So I feel like for me, that was inspiring. A second layer of what I really appreciated about this was just the concept of how supportive it can be to start paying attention to our bodies, even if we're not seeing any symptoms, like not waiting until perimenopausal symptoms like hot flashes or like dry vaginal tissues or like a menopausal flooding, not waiting for those symptoms, but really thinking along the lines of like in our 30s, really in our 30s and early 40s, being like, how can we nourish and support our nervous system? How can we nourish and support our hypothalamic pituitary adrenal axis? How can we nourish and support our hypothalamic pituitary ovarian axis? What are the different herbs and foods and lifestyle choices that we can make to support ourselves to be essentially as healthy as we can be, right? And if we've already got imbalances, if we've already got autoimmune conditions or different chronic illnesses or different, you know, joint challenges or issues, then tending ourselves, like really instead of waiting until we're at a place where we're just debilitated, prioritizing our own tending. Not just, it's so interesting to me, you know, we actually had our first session of tending the loss of an abortion, the circle that we're holding, that India, Elin, and I are holding for this moon cycle starting, we just started yesterday, April 7th, and we're going until April 28th. And in that space, it's a small circle, it's such a beautiful circle, but in that space, those who are present, it's all about like tending our womb spaces, womb healing. It's not, it is about the abortion. It is about tending the loss of the abortion and really acknowledging that piece. But in the end, these people, these beautiful women and womb-bearing humans are there because they want to move even deeper into their womb healing process, connect more with this part of themselves that maybe they've put a lot of energy into tending in the past too, but just want to continue to layer on more and more support. And I think that's something like the whole wise woman tradition really focuses on, this kind of prevention, like really looking at nourishing, doing nothing, resting, hydrating, preventing mineral nourishment from things like nourishing infusions. How can we really tend the soil of our bodies? How can we tend the soil of our spirits and our beings, so that we don't experience the level of imbalance that goes to a place of being super dysfunctional in our lives? Of course, we're not all going to be, you know, we all carry different traumas. We all carry different patterns. There may be generational patterns. Like, you can't always be like, oh, I can prevent everything, and then it's my fault. You know, I think there's a whole thing around guilt, around not doing well. Like, I've had my own health journey and challenges, and I've done so much healing work in my life. So it is, I totally get that place of like, why is this happening to me? And I just want to speak to the idea of how can we really embody more of that wise woman tradition? How can we embody more of that preventative medicine? How can we embody more of that I'm tending myself when I'm not already imbalanced, when I'm in the place of actually feeling generally well, how can I build up, fill my cup even more, so that when I am faced with some of the transitional times, so that when I am faced with some of the stressors in my life, I'm able to be resilient. I am able to not just fall on my face and have to recover and be burnt out and have to build myself back up, but I actually am able to say, okay, this is hard. I'm a little depleted. I'm going to support myself a little more, but I'm not completely falling down. Anyway, I feel like I just went on a big, long rant about that, but I feel like that really is the essence of that wise woman tradition that Serafina was speaking to and that I really like to live in relationship to, too. I think another piece of that is rest, and another piece of that is slowing down, allowing ourselves to be slow. We don't have to, just because the world is asking of us to be fast and quick and on it all the time, that it's okay. It is a revolutionary act, a radical act, to slow down, to give ourselves rest, to drink some beautiful herbal tea that's nourishing to us, to sit outside, to receive, to practice receptivity. There's so much there. There's so much there. I'm not going to keep going on and on about it. But I hope that all of this feels like an inspiration for you, that you can take something from this episode and move forward with it into your lives. And if you do want the show notes or any of the links for Serafina's work, you can get those at herbalwomb.com/episode116, herbalwomb.com/episode116. Her program that she has coming up, From the Wild Edge, sounds really incredible. So maybe something that you're interested in, if what she shared about the myth mixed with the magic mixed with the science all kind of appeals to you. All right, friends, I think that is enough for now. I have just gone on this big rant. I'm looking out the window at the tree, the hemlock tree outside, and the blue sky for the first time in many days, and the snow that is melting in the mud of our driveway, and I am just feeling grateful. I'm feeling grateful that this is the life that I get to live. And I hope that you're able to find some element of gratitude too, because I know it's hard sometimes. I know that we're all navigating a lot in our lives. So maybe that's my invitation to you right now, is to explore, just kind of scan through, allow yourself to get present, and just feel into something you're grateful for. It could be tiny, just something. And give that gift to yourself. All right. Well, I think that's it for today. Until next week, live well. Connect deeply.